First, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak at this talk, at this conference. It's a great honor for me to be here. I'm going to discuss methods for constructing pairing-friendly elliptic curves. We'll first give a brief review of pairings, talking about what is a pairing and describing the properties of pairings on elliptic curves that we're looking for. The heart of the talk is going to be the current methods in the literature for constructing pairing-friendly ordinary elliptic curves. And these fall into three main strategies: the MNT strategy for Miyagi, Nakabayashi, and Takano, the Cox and Pinch strategy, and finally the Dupont-Engel-Morin strategy. And we'll conclude by summarizing the state of the art, the best current results for constructing curves with various embedding degrees. So let's start by talking about pairings. So we have three finite cyclic groups used in cryptography that we label G1, G2, and GT. And a cryptographic pairing we define as a bilinear non-degenerate map that takes an element of G1 and an element of G2 and gives you an element of GT. To be useful in applications, this pairing needs to have a few properties. First, we need that the discrete logarithm problem in all three of the groups is computationally infeasible. And secondly, we need the pairing to be easy to compute. So in practice, the most common situation in which pairings are proposed and implemented, G1 and G2 are prime order subgroups of an elliptic curve E defined over a finite field, FQ. The order of the group is large enough for the discrete logarithm problem to be intractable. And GT is a prime order subgroup of the multiplicative group of a finite field. This field is FQ to the K for some K, where Q is the same as the FQ is the same field as the elliptic curve is defined over. And we need FQ to the K to be large enough for the problem to be, the discrete logarithm problem to be infeasible. And finally, the pairing E is the Vey pairing or the Tate pairing or some variant thereof on the elliptic curve E. And we're not going to look too much into the guts of what the pairing is here in this talk. So the use of pairings in cryptography began in the early 90s with the attack on the discrete logarithm problem on supersingular elliptic curves, discovered by Menezes, Okamoto, and Vanstone. And this attack uses the pairing to map the discrete logarithm problem from the elliptic curve into a discrete logarithm problem in a finite field. And for supersingular curves, it turns out that in most cases, the problem is easier in the finite field. The first constructive use of pairings in cryptography was in 2000 with Antoine Joux's proposal for one-round three-way key exchange. This sort of opened the floodgates, and a very exciting application, as we heard yesterday, is identity-based encryption, discovered independently by Sakai Ogishi and Kasahara and Bonet and Franklin. Another exciting application is short digital signatures, invented by Bonet, Lin, and Chacham. These signatures for the same security level as a 320-bit DSS signature can give a signature in only 160 bits. And there are many other applications, of which I've listed a few. Basically, if you take any common public key cryptographic protocol and put pairing-based in front of it, there's a paper on that topic. So let's look a little bit more into the pairings on the elliptic curves that are actually used when in these protocols. These pairings are of the form, they take the input are two R torsion points on the elliptic curve E defined over a finite field FP, usually defined over a prime finite field, and they map into the multiplicative group of some extension field FP to the K. This K, that's the extension degree of the target field, is called the embedding degree of K, because we can embed the elliptic curve discrete log problem into this finite field. We call the embedding degree of E with respect to R, or if R is understood or implicit, we just call it the embedding degree of E. Technically, K is defined as the smallest integer such that R divides P to the K minus 1. Equivalently, R is the order of the multiplicative order of P modulo R. And when choosing K, we want K to be large enough so that the discrete logarithm problem in the finite field FP to the K is computationally infeasible, but on the other hand also small enough so that the pairing is easy to compute. The parameter R is a large prime number dividing the number of points on the elliptic curve over FP. R is going to be the size of the group that determines the level of security on the elliptic curve. Might refer to it later as the cryptographic subgroup of the elliptic curve. And we define the parameter rho to be the ratio of the number of bits in P to the number of bits in R. And why? What is the purpose of rho? Well, in the protocols that use pairings, the keys and the signatures and the ciphertexts are usually elements of the elliptic curve. There are torsion points on the elliptic curve. These points need to be expressed in coordinates, which are elements of FP. So to express the point, we need to number the size of P, but the level of security is only the size of R. So rho measures this ratio, and we want rho to be small to save bandwidth. In particular, for curves with prime order, the ideal case, then this rho is extremely close to 1. So what do we know about pairings on elliptic curves? Well, there's a result due to Balasubramanian and Koblitz that if we take a so-called random elliptic curve, which I won't define here, and it has an order R subgroup, then the embedding degree of the elliptic curve is roughly R on average. And the upshot of this is that if we take a random curve, then over a field FP, if R is around the size of P and we want a level of security of about 160 bits, then the pairing is going to be computed in a field that has 2 to the 160 bits. So totally impossible to compute anything on such a curve. So this motivates our definition of a pairing-friendly curve as an elliptic curve that has a large prime-order subgroup, that is at least half the number of bits of the elliptic curve, or of the prime field, and a small embedding degree, which for our purposes here we'll take to be less than 40. The parameter 40 is somewhat arbitrary. And our problem, which is the focus of this talk, is to construct pairing-friendly elliptic curves for specified values of K and specified number of bits in R. We want to be able to vary these parameters to vary the levels of security in both the elliptic, for both the elliptic curve discrete log problem and the finite field discrete log problem. Well, a first proposal is supersingular elliptic curves. However, it's been shown that supersingular elliptic curves always have embedding degree at most 6, and in fact, for curves defined over prime fields, which are the majority of curves that are used in practice, then the embedding degree is actually exactly 2 always. So therefore, if we want to construct pairing-friendly curves for embedding degrees larger than 6, or over prime fields for other embedding degrees besides 2, then we need to look at ordinary elliptic curves. So, next we'll talk about how we actually construct pairing-friendly ordinary elliptic curves and describe the three strategies. The main tool is the complex multiplication method of curve construction due originally to Atkin and Morin. We heard a lot about this method in Rainier Brooker's talk yesterday. Briefly, for a given square-free D which we'll take to be positive and is the discriminant of our quadratic imaginary field. This method constructs an elliptic curve with complex multiplication by the imaginary quadratic field Q adjoint square root of minus D. And as we saw yesterday, we can use this method to construct curves with specified numbers of points. A little bit about the running time of this method. The running time depends on the class number, H sub D, of this quadratic imaginary field. And the bottleneck is computing the Hilbert class polynomial or some similar polynomial. And these polynomials have degree H sub D. And the best known algorithms run in roughly O of H sub D squared or O of D. These are due to Andreas Enge. So we see that the algorithms can be efficiently implemented if H sub D is not too large. The current record is class number 100,000. And in this case, it turns out that the bottleneck is actually writing down the class polynomial because it's a degree 100,000 polynomial and the coefficients are extremely large. So how can we use the CM method to generate pairing-friendly curves? Well, first we'll recall that the trace of an elliptic curve is defined as the T that satisfies the number of points is equal to Q plus 1 minus T. So to apply the CM method, we fix our discriminant D and our embedding degree K, and we look for T, R, and Q that are parameters representing the trace of the elliptic curve, the order of the subgroup, the cryptographic size subgroup, and the size of the field the curve is defined over. And these parameters need to satisfy a few properties. First, we need Q and R to be prime. Q, because it's going to be the size of a field, and in general, we're not looking for fields that are prime power sized. R, because we need to do cryptography in a subgroup of order R, and to avoid the Polak-Hellman attack, R needs to be prime. We need the number of points to be divisible by R. That's just saying we have a subgroup of order R. We need R to divide Q to the K minus 1. This is saying that the curve has embedding degree K. And finally, for the CM method, we need this equation dy squared equals 4Q minus T squared to have a solution for some integer y. And if these four properties are satisfied and the class number is not too large, we can construct an elliptic curve over the field FQ with an order R subgroup and embedding degree K. So there have been a few techniques applied to the CM method to optimize it for generating pairing-friendly curves. The first observation made, I believe, originally by Beretta, Lin, and Scott, is that this embedding degree condition R divides Q to the K minus 1 can be replaced with R divides phi sub K of T minus 1, where phi sub K is the kth isatomic polynomial. Well, and why can we do this? First of all, if k is the smallest integer, such that r divides q to the k minus 1, then by the properties of cyclotomic polynomials, r must divide the kth cyclotomic polynomial applied to q. And secondly, the r dividing the order of the elliptic curve implies that q is the same as t minus 1 mod r. Since we're only looking for modulo r conditions, we can exchange q for t minus 1. The next idea was used by a number of researchers, including Beretta, Lin, and Scott, Beretta and Nering, and Breitzing and Zhang. And this is the idea to express T, R, and Q as polynomials in terms of some parameter x. And then we can construct curves by finding integer solutions x, y to this CM equation, dy squared equals 4q minus tx squared. We can also rewrite this equation as 4h, the right side, as 4hr minus t minus 2 squared, where h is a cofactor that is the other factor besides r in the number of points on the elliptic curve. So now we get to the three different strategies. We have a fixed D and K, and we're looking for polynomials T, R, and Q satisfying some divisibility conditions and satisfying the CM equation for some X, Y. The first strategy is due to Miyagi, Nakabayashi, and Takano, and this strategy, we choose T and H somewhat at random. We compute R satisfying some these divisibility conditions, and then we solve the CM equation as an equation in two variables, X and Y. This is finding points on some affine curve. The second strategy sort of flips around the steps. This is the Cox and Pinch strategy, and in this strategy we choose R, the number of points, first, and then we compute T and H satisfying the divisibility conditions. Then we compute Y in terms of X such that the CM equation is always satisfied. And the final strategy, due to Dupont, Eng, and Morin, instead of choosing T or R first, we use resultants to find them simultaneously and then compute an H such that the CM equation is satisfied. So we'll first look at the MNT strategy. So we're looking for these polynomials T, R, and H satisfying some conditions and such that the CM equation has a solution. We choose our T and H, compute an R, and solve the CM equation in two variables. This strategy turns out to be good for constructing curves of prime order. However, it's only succeeded in doing so for five possible embedding degrees, k equals 3, 4, 6, 10, and 12. And the curves constructed by the MNT method are usually sparse, and I'll leave it to Igor Sperlinski in the next talk to define what exactly that means. So the strategy was first used by Miyagi, Nakabayashi, and Takano for embedding degrees 3, 4, and 6. It was extended by Scott and Barreto for those same embedding degrees. Barreto and Nering discovered a family of elliptic curves with embedding degree 12, and I've discovered a family with embedding degree 10. So how does the method work? Well, we fix our discriminant and our embedding degree k. We choose our polynomials t and h. And if we're looking for curves of prime order, we set h to be equal to 1. We want r to be an irreducible factor of phi sub k of t minus 1. And then we can compute q just from the formula for the number of points. And then we have an equation in two variables, dy squared equals some polynomial in x. We find integer solutions x, y to this equation. Then if for some value of x, q and r are both prime, then this is a curve of the type we're looking for, and we can use the CM method to construct the curve over fq with the specified number of points. For the remainder of this section, I'll assume that h is a constant, so we're looking for curves of prime order or nearly prime order. This already. Okay. So the difficult part of the MNT strategy is step 4, finding these integer solutions x, y to the CM equation. Now we observe that we call the right hand side of the equation f of x, and if f of x is a polynomial of degree at least 3 that has no multiple roots, then the CM equation defines a hyperelliptic curve of genus at least 1, and by Ziegle's theorem, this curve only has a finite number of integer solutions, and therefore there's no hope of us being able to choose x of the size that we're desiring and find solutions at y. So this is a problem. Well, so Ziegle's theorem tells us when we're not going to be able to find families. So conversely, we may find families if the right-hand side of the CM equation is either quadratic or has multiple roots. In general, it's hard to find such f of x for embedding degree bigger than 6. it's known that the degree of R has to be a multiple of the degree of the kth cyclotomic polynomial. For k bigger than 6, this is at least 4. So in general, if we're choosing sort of at random, the right-hand side will have degree at least 4, and we expect that in general it will not have multiple roots. So we need to, for k bigger than 6, we'll need to do something clever. So what about the solution for small k, 3, 4, and 6? Well, we want to choose t and find some factor r of phi sub k of t minus 1 such that f of x is quadratic. Well, the solution for these embedding degrees is pretty straightforward. The cyclotomic polynomial has degree 2. If we choose t linear, then phi k of t minus 1 is quadratic. We can choose r to be phi sub k or phi sub k divided by some constant. Then plugging those in, we see that f of x is also a quadratic. There are standard algorithms to find solutions x, y to the equation dy squared equals a quadratic. This involves transforming the equation into a Pell equation using continued fraction type algorithms. Then if we find a solution x, y, if we can't find solutions of the appropriate size, or if we find solutions but q and r aren't prime, then we can choose a different discriminant d and try again. However, the construction depends on solving a Pell-like equation, and such solutions grow exponentially, and therefore we expect MNT curves to be sparse, as we'll hear more about later. Finally, the MNT idea for these embedding degrees was extended by Scott and Barreto to produce curves that are not of prime order with some cofactor H. And in this case, we find many more suitable curves, even with a large prime order subgroup and some small cofactor. So the next embedding degree discovered was k equals 12. In this case, we want to choose t and find r such that this f is not quadratic, but it does have a multiple root. We first note that phi sub 12 is a degree 4 polynomial, and any irreducible factor of phi sub 12 of t minus 1 must have degree divisible by 4. If t is linear, there's no apparent solution. So the next case is when t is quadratic. Well, we're fortunate that Galbraith, McKee, and Valenza have characterized all the quadratic T such that this phi sub 12 of T minus 1 factors into two quartics. T is quadratic, phi sub 12 is degree 4, the whole thing is degree 8. In general, it will be irreducible, but for a few values of T, it actually does split. And turns out, as discovered by Barreto and Nering, that one of these T gives the desired multiple root. In this case, the CM equation becomes dy squared equals 3 times a quadratic polynomial squared. If we set d to be 3 and y to be this quadratic polynomial in x, then it's very easy to find solutions x, y. Furthermore, we see that the Barreto and Nering curves are not exponentially sparse. That is, it's easy to specify the bit size of the fields that we want to work over. Finally, I've discovered a family of curves with embedding degree 10. And in this case, we want to choose t and r such that the right-hand side of the CM equation is quadratic. Once again, phi sub 10 has degree 4. Any irreducible factor must have degree divisible by 4. So the key observation is that we need to choose our r and t such that the leading terms of the two polynomials that we're subtracting cancel each other out, namely the leading term of 4r is the same as the leading term of t squared. The smallest possible case where this could occur, since degree of r must be divisible by 4, is if the degree of r is 4 and if t is a quadratic. Once again, we turn to our helpful paper by Galbraith, McKee, and Valenza. They made the same characterization of quadratic t for phi sub 10. We find in this case, turns out there's a whole one-dimensional family of such T. And one of these T gives the desired cancellation and allows us to construct curves by solving a Pell-like equation, as in the MNT solution for K equals 3, 4, and 6. And like the MNT curves, these curves are expected to be sparse, and in fact only a few of cryptographic size have been computed to date. So the next strategy is the Cox and Pinch strategy. Once again, we're looking for T, R, and Q satisfying some divisibility conditions and such that the CM equation has some solution. The MNT solution, we chose T and H first and computed R and then solved an equation in two variables. Here, we're choosing an R first, computing a T and X, and then computing Y such that the CM equation is always satisfied. This solution turns out to be good for constructing curves of arbitrary embedding degree. However, it has not succeeded in constructing curves of prime order, and for the basic form of the method, the parameter rho, that is the ratio of the number of bits of the field versus the number of bits in the cryptographic subgroup, that ratio is usually 2. On the other hand, it's easy to construct curves of specified bit size, and there are many different curves that we can construct via this method. So how does this method work? Well, the original method, first suggested by Cox and Pinch, fix our discriminant D and our embedding degree, and choose a priori a prime R that's going to be the size of our cryptographic subgroup. We have a few minimal conditions on R, namely that K divides R minus 1, and that minus D is a square mod R. We compute a generator X of the multiplicative group of Z mod RZ. We raise X to the R minus 1 over K. This gives a kth root of unity mod R. And add 1 to that to get our trace T. We then compute a square root of minus D mod R, divide that into T minus 2 to get a parameter Y. These parameters are computed modulo R, and then we list them to the integers just by taking a representative between 0 and R, and then compute Q as T squared plus DY squared over 4 as a rational number with those values of T and Y. If the numerator is divisible by 4, and if the whole thing is prime, then we can use the CM method to construct a curve over FQ with an order R subgroup. Now we note that in step 3 and 4, the Y is constructed so that the CM equation dy squared equals 4hr minus t minus 2 squared, this equation is automatically satisfied. However, T and Y are essentially random integers in between 0 and R. There's no reason to expect that they'll be, that when we take a representative between 0 and R, they'll be much shorter than R. So since Q is roughly T squared or Y squared, it's going to have twice as many bits as R. So that strategy produces curves with rho around 2. Barreto, Lin, and Scott had the idea, and Brazing and Zhang extended it in greatest generality, to do the same construction with R, Q, and T as polynomials in a parameter X. Once again, we fix our D and our K, and this time we choose an irreducible polynomial R instead of just prime, and we're going to hope that for some values of X, R will be prime, and that's going to be the number of points on our curve. We let K be the number field that's isomorphic to Q adjoint X modulo R of X, and we require that this number field contain a kth root of unity, a primitive kth root of unity, and a square root of minus D. We choose P to be a polynomial that maps to 1 plus the kth root of unity in this number field, and we choose Y to be a polynomial that maps to T minus 2 over square root of minus D in this number field. We take low degree representatives for T and Y, we lift T and Y to the polynomials over the rational field, then we compute Q of X as a rational polynomial as T squared plus BY squared over 4. And if for some parameter, some value of X, Q of X is an integer and Q and R are prime, once again, we use the CM method to construct the curve we're looking for. So here we're constructing Q and R as polynomials, and we see that the parameter rho, as X increases, the polynomials will be dominated by their leading terms, and so the parameter rho, which is log Q over log R, will be the ratio of the degrees of the leading terms. So if we're working modulo this polynomial R, we can always choose T and Y to have degree strictly smaller than the degree of R. And since the degree of Q is twice the degree of T and Y, then in general, well, then we can always choose Q to have degree at most twice the degree of R minus 2. So when we divide that by the degree of R to get rho, we see that we can always get a value of rho that's strictly less than 2. And this improves on the basic Cox and Pinch method. Furthermore, with clever choices of R and T, that is to say, clever choices of this number field we're working over, the parameter rho can be decreased even further. The best current result is that for K as a prime congruent to 3 mod 4, we can always get rho to be K plus 1 over K minus 1. And this is a result that I haven't proven, but it has worked for all of the K I've tried up to several hundred. So we also see that this method has the advantage that there are no restrictions on the embedding degree K, and that we're choosing these polynomials such that we can plug in pretty much any value of X, and the method also works for numerous values of D. As a comparison, the MNT strategy produced curves only with embedding degree less than 12, and the curves were sparse. However, the MNT strategy did produce curves of prime order. The final strategy is due to Dupont, Enge, and Morin. And once again, we're looking for T, R, and H satisfying some divisibility conditions and such that the CM equation has a solution. The DEM strategy is to choose D and Y in advance and then use resultants to find T and R simultaneously such that the divisibility conditions are satisfied. And then we compute H such that the CM equation has a solution. These curves have the same properties as the Cox and Pinch curves. They can be constructed for arbitrary K, and we can't find curves of prime order. In general, rho is approximately 2. And the method has not been generalized to produce families of curves in terms of a parameter x. So how does the Dupont-Enge-Morin strategy work? Well, first we choose our discriminant D and some y, and then we compute the resultant of the two single variable polynomials in T, P sub k of t minus 1 and dy squared minus T minus 2 squared. These are two polynomials in one variable. The result is an integer. If R is a factor of this integer, then by the properties of resultants, there is some T such that when we plug T into both the polynomials, you get 0 mod R. And furthermore, this T is easy to compute. From this T and Y, we can compute Q, the size of our prime field. And if Q is prime, then we can construct the curve that we're looking for. Again, we see T is going to be some value mod R, such that the polynomials are both 0 mod R. It's essentially going to be random mod R, so it's going to have the same number of bits. Q grows as t squared, so q will have twice the number of bits as r, that is a parameter of rho that's about 2. And once again, we haven't, as far as I know, there's no generalization of this method to find families of curves parameterizing T, R, and Q as polynomials. So what do we actually know about pairing-friendly elliptic curves constructed using these three methods? Well, first we saw the MNT strategy was good for constructing curves of prime order. However, there were only five possible embedding degrees for which we can get curves of prime order. Furthermore, we see that the curves constructed via the MNT strategy are usually sparse. On the other hand, we have the Cox and Pinch strategy. This is good for constructing curves with arbitrary embedding degree. However, it has not succeeded in constructing curves of prime order. Rho is in general 2. And using the improvements, we can get rho closer to 1 for various embedding degrees, but we can't get it close enough to 1 so that the curves have prime order. On the other hand, we can construct many different curves, and it's easy to specify the bit sizes of the curves constructed. Finally, we have the Dupont-Engel-Morin strategy. This constructs the same types of curves as the Cox and Pinch strategy. However, there exists, at the moment, no generalization which produces curves with rho less than 2. And therefore, in practice, the Cox and Pinch curves, as generalized by Breitling and Zhang, are always going to be preferable to Dupont, Enge, and Morin curves. So we have finally this table that summarizes the state of the art for various k, and it charts the smallest known rho value for even embedding degrees k. We choose even embedding degrees because, as we saw in Mike Scott's talk yesterday, these are much more efficient for implementation, and also because if I'd tried to list all embedding degrees up to 40, I would have run out of space. The rho value listed here is the limit as the size of the curves gets large, so the size of the fields. And we see that for small embedding degrees, 4, 6, 10, and 12, there are curves of prime order due to the MNT strategy, which give a rho for value of 1. In all the other cases, the curves are computed using the Breitling and Zhang generalization of the Cox and Pinch strategy. And we see that in some cases, for example, embedding degree 32 and 34, this rho value is very close to 1. So if we implemented curves of this embedding degree, not much bandwidth would be wasted. However, in some cases, such as 18, 20, 36, we see that the rho is around 3/2, so there's much improvement to be desired. The values marked with a star indicate improvements over the best previously published results to my knowledge, and this is work in progress that is joint with Mike Scott, and we expect to have a preprint up in the next month. Thank you. In terms of bandwidth. Right. Is this true if you're allowed to specify your embedding degree arbitrarily? I thought for.
Depends on what kind of security parameters you're after. Depends on what you know. You might rather go, if you want to use certain pairings, it might be better to find something with a smaller trust. But in pairings, it's
right. Right. Yeah. So for implementations, basically they have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis in terms of what's actually the fastest for what your particular problem is.
Well, could this table be merged with the information about things like hitting multiple things faster and get some sort of speed instead of just bandwidth?
Probably. Yes. I haven't done that. But that's a good idea.